This episode is sponsored by Kendo UI. Kendo UI allows you to build better apps faster. They have a comprehensive library ranging from data grids and charts to buttons and sliders. Plus, you can use their components as plain JavaScript as well as in Angular, React, and Vue. They have a large collection of customizable popular themes like Bootstrap and Material. Go check them out at reactroundup.com/KendoUI. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of React Roundup. This week on our panel, we have Tara Minixik.
Hi, everybody.
You know, Tara, I think when you introduced yourself at something else, you said your name a little bit differently. Am I saying it right?
Oh, yeah. So you're actually saying it the more proper way than I say it.
Oh, really?
Because you're supposed to pronounce it Minixik. But I always have pronounced it Manisik, but I think it's more of a lazy thing than a correct pronunciation thing. So everybody in the Philippines pronounces it Manisik. So you should stay, I should change.
Yeah, I think it was at the React Dev Summit, you said Manisik, and I was like, oh no, am I saying it wrong?
No, not at all. I would unabashedly correct you if you were saying it wrong.
Okay, good. I think I had another co-host. I can't remember who it would have been, but I think I said their name wrong for like 6 months. And then they finally took me aside. We met in person and they were like, by the way. Anyway, side note, I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv. And this week we have Dave, I want to say Sidia.
Sedia.
It's
close.
See, I'll just make up new pronunciations for people's names and then we'll okay, right? So Dave, you want to give us a brief introduction? Let us know who you are, what you do, why you're famous.
Sure. So I've got a day job doing React development and on the side of that, I have a blog that's just davesedia.com where I blog about React and lately some more Redux and stuff like that. And I wrote a book called Pure React that kind of walks people through the first steps and gives them a bunch of exercise and helps people get started.
Nice. So we brought you on to, let me see how many buzzwords I can get into this, to talk about hot reloading with Create React App. And then I want to just add on like machine learning, cryptocurrency, I don't know.
And ejecting. We have to somehow put ejecting in there. How? No. That's more right. Ejecting.
Yeah, no more ejecting. I don't know anything about cryptocurrencies and all that other stuff, so stick with the React stuff.
Sounds good. So do you want to just kind of give us the 10,000 foot view on the hot module reloading and how that works with Create React App? Because for me, I mean, I've used Create React App. Of course, that's the extent of my expertise, right? Oh, look, I have React App now. So yeah, I'm like, oh, well, hot module reloading sounds a little bit involved and scary.
Yeah. So I think it is a little involved and scary, or at least it seems that way. And so the big picture behind hot module reloading is really about giving you like a faster development workflow. It's all about that developer experience. So like in the olden days, you know, you change something on the server side. If you've got the server rendered app or something and you hit the refresh button. So you're doing refreshes a lot and lots of, so it's kind of slow and manual. And then that sort of changed into, you know, a few years ago, like live reload became a thing. And so it was auto refreshing. And Create React App does this out of the box. So whenever you change your files, your app reloads, but it's a full page reload. Mm-hmm. And hot module reloading kind of, is like the next evolution of that where the page doesn't reload. It just basically replaces the code in memory and then re-renders. So you get like a React re-render, but you don't have the full page load. So it saves a little bit of time. And that's kind of the why it's cool and why people bother with it, I think. So where that comes in with Create React App is that, so Webpack, which Create React App is kind of based around, has support for hot module reloading built in. But Create React App doesn't really expose it, doesn't really turn it on by default. So to get the basics installed, you just need to add a couple lines of code to your Create React App, and then you can hot reload away.
Gotcha. So how do you set that up? Do you just go hack Webpack? Do you have to eject first?
You don't need to eject. So there's kind of two different ways of doing it. The simpler way, you don't need to eject. And for like the more complex way, you either can eject or you can use this React App Rewired library that we can talk about in a bit. But the easy way is you add like three lines of code. You say if module.hot, and then inside the if block, you say module.hot.accept as a function call, and then you're done. Throw that in your index.js file, and you should be able to go from there. So the reason that's not the end of the story is because it'll get you hot reloading, but it doesn't retain state at all. So if you're a React app, you know, if you've gone and clicked through things and you've built up any sort of component state, when it hot reloads, that component state will be wiped out.
I feel like I don't have as many questions on hot reloading because it's one of those things where it just makes, it kind of like makes sense to use it for, I mean, to make it easier for you to, you know, not lose your state.
Yeah.
But is there kind of a place where people are like, okay, I have to start using hot reloading now? Like, what is kind of the timeline? Is there like a certain switch where you're just like, okay, now I need to really start taking advantage of hot reloading?
I don't know. I'm not really sure if there's a point where people like decide they really have to start using it. It kind of helps from the beginning, really. If you want to put it in the beginning, it just kind of makes the whole experience a little nicer. Yeah, I mean, for a larger app, I guess the larger the app gets, the longer the page reloads will probably take. And so the hot reloading will help a little bit with that.
So if do you have a good resource for when people are starting to build out their application to you know, start going with hot reloading from the get?
Yeah, I've got a blog post that goes through a couple different ways to do this. And we can link it in the show notes. It's just hot reloading and create React app without ejecting. So it goes through that easy way, and then it kind of goes into the more complex way if you want to retain state. And that involves either ejecting, or you can use this library called React App Rewired that sort of injects itself into Create React App and takes over the Webpack config a little bit.
So do you want to just talk about that package for a minute and just explain, do you just npm install it and then hack Webpack, or is there more to it than that?
That's pretty much, yeah. So there's a little more to it than that. So you npm install React App Rewired, and there's also this React App Rewire hot loader, which makes it work with React hot loader, which you also have to install. So there's three packages. And then you make a single file in the root of your project called configoverides.js. And in that thing, you basically export a single function that receives the Webpack config that Create React App created for you. So it receives that config and then it returns a new one. So basically it's just sort of like sits there as a pass through where you can change it however you need to. So you pass that through the rewire React hot loader library. And then back in your index.js file, there's just a couple of lines to add. It's not quite as simple as the if module hot accept thing. There's a couple more arguments to it, but it's essentially the same thing. You set it up so that your app renders once, and then it just kind of waits around for hot reloading events.
Gotcha. And so are there any changes you can make that then wouldn't hot reload?
So there are some. So there aren't really changes that wouldn't hot reload, but there are some that might force a full page refresh.
Okay.
There's some cases where I've seen it where, like, if you make an error and you get that Create React App error screen, like your next change won't be a hot reload; it'll be a full refresh. So that's the most obvious one that comes to mind. And I think I've seen other cases where I'm not really sure why it happened, but sometimes it just does a full refresh. Just deal with it, but.
So yeah. If I update my package.json, pull in a bunch of new files, it'll just keep ticking along just fine?
I think it will full refresh for that.
Okay.
I think it will. Not 100% sure on that, but yeah.
And if I put in new overrides for my Webpack file, will that force a full refresh?
It probably should, because... Actually, I'm not sure about that, because that config overrides thing is kind of a, I think it's only read once when Create React App starts up.
Oh, okay.
So I would imagine you'd probably have to restart Create React App for that, actually.
So why do you think that Create React App didn't have this in there from the beginning?
I think it's kind of a little bit I think it's a little bit of complexity. I think you sort of have to know what to expect from it, because in the simple case, it'll reset your state, but it won't really look like it reset anything. Like your app doesn't blink. It just sits there and then suddenly all your state's gone. So that can be kind of confusing. And then, the alternative one is based around Dan Abramov's React Hot Loader library that he created like way back. So that thing, it's instead of reloading the whole app at the root level, which is what the simple method does, it kind of keeps track of every single component and will reload individual ones so it can retain state. But then there's a bunch of weird edge cases, and sometimes your app gets in a funny state where half of it reloaded, but it didn't have its latest dependencies or something. And you can get into some funny cases where you end up doing a full page refresh. Anyway, you know, I think part of the focus with Create React App is to make a really good developer experience, especially for beginners. And this sort of adds a bunch of complexity that, you know, beginners might just be confused by or stumble over or whatever. So I think that's why it's not in there by default.
That makes sense. I wonder if it'll be behind a flag at some point in the future.
Yeah, maybe.
That'd be nice.
That'd be cool. Yeah, they've really adhered to the idea of like not making anything configurable. Like there's like very little configuration you can do, which I think is kind of good. I think, you know, there's certainly a subset of people that want to change it and or want to be able to customize things. And like that React App Rewired project really helps with that. So for most of my projects, I just stick with Create React App. If I need to change anything, I do that rewire.
That would be a really interesting thing to for, especially like kind of like skeleton building things like Create React App and Preact, where it's just like, all right, we'll give you three questions about state. And if you understand this, you can unlock the.
That'd be pretty awesome. I could just see all the blog posts now, like the cheat code for how to unlock hot reloading.
I'm sorry, you're not smart enough for this feature.
Well, I mean, it is interesting, especially with things like that, where it's just like, it's so easy. Like I like when I'm being introduced to different like frameworks and libraries and stuff to have the skeleton that I can break in order to understand more. But there is definitely, we just did another podcast. I was talking about service workers, and we were saying how so many, like you get service workers in Create React App, but do you understand them yet? Maybe not.
Shaking my head. No, I usually just leave that. There's that register service worker line. I'm just like, I don't really know what that does. I'm going to leave it alone. yes. And then sometimes I take it out because it causes weird caching problems.
that's the thing. If you don't understand caching, it's just like, this could be a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
But it's one of the things we were kind of talking about. But yeah, so maybe a kind of like a choose your own adventure, whatever answers you get right is what it builds up for your application.
There you go. I do wonder though, I mean, you know, the hot reloading really, or hot module reloading, I don't want to leave any concepts out of this, right? But it really does seem like something that, I don't know, if you really think about it, I don't see any downside to putting it in there, right? Especially if it's a setting I set once and then I don't have to worry about it again. So, I don't know, maybe I'm just, you know, overthinking this, but it seems like something that, yeah, you put behind a flag or put in by default or just make really, really easy to turn on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the simple method is pretty easy to turn on. So I guess that's, it gets you most of the way there. I linked to one of the, there's a post by Mark Erickson talking about the differences between, he goes into details about how like the Webpack hot module reloading versus or differs from React Hot Loader. And he in that article, he mentions that he prefers the plain old one, that the simple one that resets the state, because it's predictable. Either you get a full page reload occasionally, or you get the, you know, you get the hot reload, but your state is gone. Whereas in the React one, you sort of have to be thinking about like, what did I change and what might not get updated correctly or whatever.
Right.
I have read a blog post it was a while ago, but I did find it. It was by Charlie Gleason. And it was saying that, like, because there are some things that don't like being loaded or being fired too many times. So the one that he talks about was in 3JS. They have like a WebGL renderer that doesn't like being fired too many times. So I could see that as something where it's just like, okay, you don't want to fire everything so many times. Are there other examples like that that would make it a little more sketchy to make it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so like event handlers are one of those things. So I was working on an Electron app where in the index.js file, it sets up a couple event handlers for like listening to Electron messages from the Electron process. And so for the most part, I'm usually not changing things in that file, so it doesn't hot reload. But if I did change something that affected that file or made it hot reload, then I'd have multiple copies of the event listener. So something that responded to like, hey, like a download started or something. So then after a couple of these hot reloads, I'd start a download and I'd get like 5 notifications that a download started because, you know, and like run this code multiple times. So I think, you know, maybe there's something I could do to prevent that. I just kind of worked around it by, you know, if I noticed weirdness, I just do a hard refresh. But yeah, there are definitely some things where you think about things that don't want to run multiple times, then yeah, because the whole app doesn't reset. You know, all everything's still in memory, really. So yeah, something to watch out for.
It's interesting.
So are there other ways that you customize Create React app? I'm kind of curious to see where you would go next.
Let's see. So I think the only really big one is SAS, like SCSS. Mm-hmm. I still haven't really jumped aboard the CSS and JS train yet. So still kind of in SAS land, but, and there's ways around this without having to go in and like modify the Webpack config. Like you can set up a separate watcher for your SAS files and have Create React app pull those in. But then you've got to start up two things or, you know, modify your start script or whatever. So I kind of hacked up the Webpack config to add SAS support. Mm-hmm.
Did you have to eject for that or?
No. So I used the rewire approach where it just kind of intercepts the, when Create React app loads its Webpack config, it kind of like loads your little loader thing first. It passes through your customization function. And you can modify it however you want. There's sort of a downside to that in that by doing that, you're tying yourself to the internals of that Webpack config. You know, you're taking it, that literal JavaScript object, and modifying it. So if, you know, in Create React App updates, if they change the structure of that thing, then it might break your customizations and you might have to go and fix your customization file, which I've had to do a couple times. So it's not a good thing if you want to stay away from Webpack and you don't understand it yet and you kind of just want everything to work. It's not a great method to go down. I think you kind of should understand a little bit about Webpack before you take on that that extra responsibility of having to maintain that config.
Right.
What do you think is like some key points about Create React App that you should understand before you start making any kind of customizations for yourself?
So I think they've thought of a lot of use cases, and the README file for Create React App is very long and it covers a ton of different stuff you might want to do. So definitely if you're thinking like, oh, I wanted to do this, but how do I customize it or whatever? Go check the README first because there's a really good chance that someone has answered that question and put it in there. You know, everything from like deploying to different production hosts and, you know, how to make it work with SAS without ejecting and all this kind of stuff. Definitely like try to avoid modifying it if you can. In some cases, you know, there might be some small modifications you might want to do. Like, I think we wanted to add some ESLint rules, and we overrode that part to like tell it to look for an ESLint RC file, so we could override some of them. But yeah, that was another example of something that modified. But I think in general with Create React App, I like its approach. I think kind of before that, all of the it was either you clone a whole boilerplate project, and then you know, like you were saying, Tara, like on one hand you get to understand that config and play with it and stuff, but on the other hand, it's yours now. Like if you need to change it, or like Webpack, you know, Webpack 7 comes out or something, and you've got to update it all, that can be kind of painful. I know, like in past projects, pre-Webpack, like when I was doing, I did Angular for a year and a half or so. And I know we started with like a grunt build, and then a little while later, it got kind of slow. And then we upgraded to a gulp build and had to rewrite the whole thing. And then a little while later, we were like, oh, Webpack is cool. And so kind of these constant like build pipeline rewrites and stuff, and having to like, you learn about the build system, you get it working, and then you forget it. And then 5 months later, when you have to change it again, you have to relearn the whole thing. So
I'm just happy to be away from those names. Grunt, yeah, like, yes, give me Webpack. It makes me sound like an adult again. Thank you.
That's really true. Yeah.
Yeah, that is. So I'm going to ask a noob question. I need to get like a soundbite too, so that when I say that, you know, it plays some little, you're such a noob. I don't know. Anyway, my noob question is what's the downside of ejecting from Create React App? I mean, what are the trade-offs of going one way or the other?
Because it seems also, like also noob questions are great, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Noob questions are great.
But I'm wondering, you know, so you get out of the system, but you still have a working compiling app, right? So
yeah,
what's the downside?
So the downside is that by ejecting, you are taking that config into your own hands now. So if Create React App, they release new versions pretty often. And they usually have some bug fixes or some new features or something. And it's usually nice stuff, usually like better development experience, or handles some, you know, special build problems or certain environments or whatever. Stuff that, you know, I think would take a long time to nail down on your own, like if you had cloned a boilerplate or something. So I think part of the benefit of Create React App is that your build system becomes a dependency that you can just update by going in package.json. You just bump the version and you can get, you know, whatever the community has decided is the latest and greatest build setup. Which is awesome, because like, but you know, a little while back, I think it was Webpack 4 or 3 or maybe both. Well, whatever the latest was, they updated Create React App to use the latest Webpack within, you know, within a few weeks or something. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you had ejected, if you wanted that new stuff, you know, you might have to, maybe you'd make a new project and re-eject and copy over the changes, or you'd have to, you know, clone the Create React App, React Scripts project and merge the changes into your own stuff. And it's just more of a hassle to manage, basically, and kind of keep keeping it current.
So let me see if I can restate this, because, I mean, part of me thinks, okay, well, as long as I have a working tool chain, you know, I don't know if I care. But the flip side of it is that if you are worried about it, or if you, you know, you want to stay on top of the latest tool chain, the latest, you know, whatever there is out there, you know, or maybe they make a major performance improvement to Webpack, or, you know, some new tool comes out that makes your front end code perform better, and that gets looped into it. You get the benefit of that without having to do anything. You just run your update and it updates Create React App, which updates everything else.
Yeah. Yep, that's accurate. Yeah, so if you don't care about the latest stuff, or you're just happy to, or the project isn't going to be all that long lived or something, you know, there's not a ton of harm in it. But if you're going to be going for a bit longer, or you don't want to maintain Webpack, or you don't really understand it, and you just want to stay kind of on the React side of things, yeah, ejecting is kind of drops that stuff in your lap. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Do you run your own freelance business? Or maybe you're thinking about picking up some business on the side? Well, then you need FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the quickest and easiest way to get invoices out to your clients. It's easy to use. It works anywhere, available from any device on the desktop, iPhone, iPad, Android, and all of your data is backed up and secure. And it makes it really easy to get organized and get paid. You'll be tracking time, logging expenses, and invoicing your clients in no time. You can also save time billing, freeing up several days per month to focus on the work that you love, and you get paid faster. FreshBooks customers are paid on average 5 days faster because there's a link on the invoice that says pay me now. And it's a great way to grow your business. Plus, FreshBooks is offering a 30-day trial. That's right, 30-day trial if you try them out. So go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section. Once again, for a 30-day trial, go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I don't know if I have any other questions. So yeah, if you have questions. Well,
I was going to ask real quick, going back to one thing that you said, Dave, you said that there was one other change that you made. Was it with ESLint or ES in general?
It was ESLint. Yeah. We wanted to add some custom ESLint rule or something, or change the rules. Because Create React App does come with a bunch of nice ESLint rules for you. We wanted to add one that wasn't there, and there was no nice way to add one at the time. This was a little while ago now, so they may have changed it too. But at the time at the time you couldn't create like a .eslint file and add your own rules in there. I don't know if that's still true, but
so what did you do?
So there was some part of the whatever part of the Webpack config turned on ESLint, had some Boolean that basically said like whether or not to look for a config. It's like use ESLint config or something like that. And it was set to false and it just looked it to true. And
so yeah, every time, to my file. Every time that you've kind of made these changes, have you basically just gone through and maybe not just did like control F through there, but basically gone through the files and or is it basically just control?
Yeah, basically. I mean, so actually another nice thing about, I think, Create React App is that it's like very well documented, like, you know, not just the README, but the code itself. So if you want like an example Webpack config to look through, mm-hmm. CRA has a really good one. And every little line is documented with like multiple lines of comments as to like why it's there or like, you know, what issue prompted this change or what environment it broke in, why they're doing it a certain way. So that's all good. It makes it easy to, if you want to customize it and you want to know what that structure is, the structure of the, you know, of the Webpack config is, so you can change it. It makes it easy to just pull it up on GitHub or in your node modules or whatever and comb through it.
Working so much with Create React App and like going through and customizing it, have you found or any points where it was like a gotcha for you or any kind of tips that you were like, oh, I wish I would have known this when I started working with Create React App?
So I'll mention one thing that I ended up helping add to Create React App because I wanted it to be there in the beginning and it wasn't. Nice. So Webpack Dev Server has this proxy ability. So you can set it up to basically forward API requests to some backend server. So that in your Create React App config, you can say, you can set a proxy field to some other server. So if you've got a server in Node or Java or anything really, you can proxy your API requests, which means that your front end code can make calls to, so if you, you know, in production, if your app is going to be served by some server where, you know, /API was your API endpoint or something, you can leave that code in your development environment and this proxy thing will just kind of forward the requests along to your server.
And that's just a config that you're setting there?
Yeah, it's built in. So all you have to do is go in package.json, add one line that says proxy and then the URL and it takes care of the rest.
That's awesome.
Nice. That is super helpful. I've got a article about how to set that up. Create React App with an Express backend. And it, you know, it works with any backend, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of want to stay in JavaScript land. So
I love JavaScript land.
Yeah. Me too. But I always get those questions. I think from, you know, from newer developers who are like, well, does React work with PHP? I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's just, any backend will work fine. But
you're like, fine. Yeah. You can use it if you want to. yeah, you have a ton of blog posts on here. Do you enjoy writing blog posts?
Yeah, it's fun.
I was going to say, I think that's a trick question, but
yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
I'm always impressed. I write blog posts and I'm always like, oh, do I have to? And then it ends up being like 2,000 words long. I'm like, oh no.
That's kind of how it goes for me too. I mean, I think like, I don't necessarily look forward to writing blog posts, but like once I start writing it, it's fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And I sort of try to get myself to write one every week, but sometimes it's a couple weeks.
Where do you draw inspiration from to write them? Is it just whatever you're working on, or is there something else?
It's mostly like questions I see on places like Reddit, Twitter, dev.2, different forums and stuff like that, basically. Gotcha. Trying to figure out what like real developers are struggling with and writing articles around that. So it makes it easy to usually to find like very specific small things to write about. Like I recently wrote, like just the other day, wrote an article about this unexpected token error, which is like error parsing JSON when the JSON is actually HTML. But it can be a little more work to come up with like larger topics that I think are going to be valuable to more than right. like one specific those, problem.
Those small ones are great though, because there are certain things that I've done where I'll hit the same error multiple times and be like, wait, how did I fix that again? I know I fixed it before. Yeah. But I feel like every time I get one of those errors, if I just wrote something about it, like reference my own blog post. But also, I just saw the one that you have that's like, love JavaScript but hate CSS. And that's basically my tagline for life. So I'm looking forward to reading this article, because it's just like, every time I run into CSS things, I'm like, oh no.
That's funny. That article, yeah, so that one is actually based on a reader question. Someone emailed me and said something about how they were enjoying getting into React, but they really hated CSS.
Yes.
I think they said they hated design or something. And I was like, you mean CSS? They're like, yeah. Nice. And so I wrote that article, and it's funny because I wrote that and all these people came out of the woodwork. They're like, I love CSS. I hate JavaScript though. So
of course.
It was just interesting that, you know, obviously there's both viewpoints and everything in between, but yeah, you write something like that and you get all the viewpoints.
Yep. You're wrong. And here's why.
Yeah. The best way to find out what the right answer is, right? To write the wrong one.
Yeah, there you go. Put up the wrong answer on Stack Overflow.
Yeah. I had another one recently with one of these other ones. I think the initializing state article, where I talked about how to use like not writing a constructor and just initializing state as a class property. And binding functions as class properties with arrow functions instead of binding them in the constructor. And someone asked, like, are there any performance considerations? I'm like, no, I don't think so. You know, none that I know of. It seems like it should be fine. And then someone responded with a link to jsperf.com. It's like, yeah, this the arrow functions thing is slower. I was like, well, I stand corrected.
Yep.
Still easier to write though, and it's, you know, it's still. I think it on my system, it was like 119,000 operations per second or something. So it's like, I'm not going to worry. It's okay.
I'm pretty sure that is because I have heard of being of that's it's a small amount though, but I have heard of the speed difference. But it would be interesting to figure out, like, instead of waiting for an answer on Stack Overflow or something, like write your question as a blog post written the wrong way, and then you're like,
yeah.
I know this is wrong, but I'm going for it anyway.
Yeah. And just post it on some subreddit, like, this is the right way to do it. You would get the answer real quick.
Immediately, yeah. No matter what time in the morning. I'm going to try that method out. May ruin your reputation completely, but...
Yeah.
And that's all on your site, DaveSedia.com, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Now I don't even know if I said that right.
Dave Sedia. Yeah, that's right.
You had to pronounce it yourself as well.
I was going to say, I usually don't have to vocalize my own name to know whether or not somebody said it.
I've heard it so many different ways now. Just
I'm sure, yeah. Oh, we confused you. Now I feel better. Oh, sorry, I'm a little punch drunk today. I am so tired.
It's from exhaustion?
I guess.
It happens to the best of us. You got to get your energy up for next week anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so where do you think your work with Create React App is going to bring you next? Do you have any things in mind that you want to be doing with it?
I don't know. I did a little bit of contributing to the project early on with that proxy feature and stuff. I haven't done much with it since then. I've just kind of been using it. And I point people to it every chance I get, basically. I think it seems like the React community has kind of steered towards that as recommending the default for the most part now. I know for a while it was kind of fighting the tide of, you know, people asking which boilerplate should I use, and I was like, use Create React App. Don't use a boilerplate unless you already know. If you already know that stuff, awesome, but not a great way to get started if you're just getting into React. Create React App is definitely the right way to get started if you're just getting into React.
Yep.
I like it a lot, and especially for writing tutorials. It's like the best way to just be like, okay, spin up a React application. Create a React App. Done. Yeah.
Yep. I think around the time it got created, there were a few other tools that did a similar thing. There was one called Quick and one called React Heatpack. And I was trying to spread the word of those for a while, and then Create React App came out and it was like, oh, it's the official one. You just use that now. But I wrote my whole, I wrote my book using that approach, like telling people to just start off with Create React App, just like ignore Webpack, you know, go learn that stuff when you need to later. But, you know, if you want to learn how to build UIs, you know, focus on the UI, you can learn the other stuff later.
That was definitely something that slowed us down. Like this was two and a half years ago or something. And me and my, like in our company, we were switching. Everything was written in Backbone. So we had to like rewrite everything, and we switched over to React, and we had like a session on Webpack to get so that we could get started with React. And I remember it was like, we did do it where it's like, you know, a fellow employee would have a session, like teach us Webpack right after they learned it. So that may have not helped either, but I remember leaving that session like, wait, what? and so it like took us, so then we each kind of like went on our own and like learned Webpack our own style and whatnot. But that is definitely kind of a bit of a hurdle to get started. But I mean, thankfully there's so many like great resources out there. Like Sean Larkin has like probably not been at home for the past, you know, 12 months teaching everybody about Webpack. But it is great to be able to have the opportunity to just jump into React applications without worrying about your build process just yet.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, I completely agree, because I want to learn how to write React, and then I can figure out if I need to do something different with building React. And I think that's a critical thing if you want people to adopt it. And especially if you have people who don't understand build systems well enough to even comprehend what Webpack is doing for them. You know, get them a little more experience under their belt, and then let them go bang their head against that particular wall.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of at a high level, I guess. It's like, what problem are you trying to solve with React? Like, you're probably not trying to write a build system for fun. Like that's not why you're getting into it.
No, probably not.
You probably want to build an MVP or something. Like,
I do want to meet that person who is building that for fun.
I think this is another one of those things where opinions, you know, there's both sides of that, where people think that some people really learn best by knowing how all the nitty gritty, you know, underbelly stuff works, and mm-hmm. they start there and go up to the React stuff later. But I still think for most beginners, you know, I think usually those people are the ones who are more experienced developers and are trying to figure out how does this thing really tick before I go and put my time into it.
Well, even beyond beginners too, just thinking of those teams that are like, okay, I need to get this out ASAP.
Like, right.
I mean, and it's like, we only have so many developers, we only have so much time. So to be able to just produce something quickly that works and has everything in place we're supposed to be, so then you just put out fires when the time comes.
Yeah, right.
But ever since Crete React and like Preact have been like some of the two things that I'm just immediately, I like throwing things together with those two libraries.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't done much with Preact yet. Seems nice. How do you like it over React? Is it just the size mainly, or is there something else?
So that's the one of the biggest things is the size, but also Preact, Jason Miller is the creator of Preact, and he made it, I think this was around I/O of last year, he made it that you, when you build up a Preact application skeleton app, you pass 100 on the Progressive Web App Lighthouse tests.
Oh.
Yeah, so that is pretty awesome. It's just really easy to use. He's since joined the Google team, but I know that he's still trying to do stuff with the Preact project. He has been for a while. So I have a feeling we may learn more at Google I/O this year in May. So we'll see. But I definitely recommend people just trying it out with, I have a lot of, I'm an idea person. So I have like far too many ideas that I'm always just want to be like, well, what can I do this with this and make this weird app that nobody will ever use? And Preact's great for that too.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to do a show on Preact if we can finagle that.
Wrangle Jason.
Yeah.
I'll ambush him at I/O and see.
Sweet.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'll get you some developer netting.
I think that just means socks. I think that's how you snag custom socks, is how you snag developers' attention. So that is the official developer netting.
Yeah. Nice nerd t-shirt. Where'd you get it? Awesome. Well, I think we are, we've been talking for about an hour. So let's jump in and do some picks.
For you, Loot Crate is offering an opportunity to save 10% on any new subscription at lootcrate.com. Just enter the promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. Loot Crate is one of my favorite things. Every month I get a box in the mail, costs less than $20, and it comes with all kinds of goodies. I have stuff from, just looking at my shelf, Batman, Spider-Man, Ninja Turtles, Back to the Future, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and much, much more. So if you're a geek, a gamer, anything like that, and you want cool stuff to put around your office, cool t-shirts, comic books, etc., then definitely check out Loot Crate. To save 10% on your new subscription, go to lootcrate.com/ruby. Again, that's lootcrate.com/ruby to save 10% on any new subscription. Enter the promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings.
Tara, do you have some picks for us?
So I think I only have, I've tried to think of a non-technical one and a technical one. And so I think this one just combines both of them. So I don't know if either of you have heard about Patreon, but it's a great way to fund different, really, usually it's like people or projects, and you kind of do it as a monthly thing. And I have just started doing it. So I only have three main ones. And the three that I have are this guy called MPJ. He's Matthias, and he's MPJme on Twitter. And he runs these great videos called Fun Fun Function on YouTube. And he's really fun to watch, very informative in learning what he talks about whatever he talks about. He's got a ton of videos. And then I also fund, her name is @Fox on Twitter. And she based, she was, helped curate JSConf AU and CSSConf AU and is a huge inclusion activist, does a lot of really great work. And then also Pharos, I never know if I'm saying his name right. He makes a standard JS and WebTorrent. And so it's basically Pharos. Thank you. So yeah, he makes WebTorrent and standard JS. And I'm a huge fan of standard JS. And so I was like, oh, I'm a fan of this. Let me help you make great things. And so that's actually how I started with Patreon. So yeah, that would be my pick is, and I think it's, yeah, Patreon, patreon.com. And that will be my sole pick for the week.
Awesome. If you want something else to donate to folks, you can also go to patreon.com/devchattv and you can support us. So
that's awesome. Right. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were on there. That's great.
Yeah. There is a link on the website as well. If you go there, devchat.tv or any of the web properties for the podcasts, right at the top in the top menu, it's podcasts, then events and conferences, about, and then Patreon. It's right there. So if you can't remember the URL, just go to devchat.tv. You can find it. I'm going to jump in here with a few picks. So one of them is called Star Realms. It's a card game that I play on my iPad. And it's funny because you actually, you know, move the cards on your screen. But it's just kind of nice, fun, mindless game that I can play. And also last week I was in Vail, which is why I wasn't on the show, because I was traveling. Rebug, which is an Angular development firm, but they flew me out for the Angular meetup out there. I actually talked about stuff that's pretty applicable to developers everywhere. But yeah, then they took me up to Vail and I had a terrific time up there. I did spend a few hours playing Star Realms with the one of the partners in the company who was up there with me. So yeah, he was on his laptop and I was on mine. We were chatting and playing Star Realms, which is kind of funny. But yeah, just wandering around Vail. I don't really ski. I think I might pick it up this year, which is, it's funny because I live in Salt Lake City, but I don't really ski. So, you know, we just went and did other things. And there were some terrific restaurants up there. Just some fun things to walk around and see and do. And it's kind of, I don't know how strongly I would say it has this theme, but it does have kind of a European feel to it. And so that was kind of fun. I think they were trying to get like an Alpine Alps feel to it. So anyway, fun town.
I also do not know how to ski or snowboard. So if you want a total noob up there with you to make you look better, let me know. And I'll come join.
I can help with that too.
Group trip.
I'm terrible at both.
There we go. I've been skiing like 3 times in my life and it was fun, but it also gets expensive if you're going to go multiple times during the season. So
I just run into trees.
Yeah, even I just fell over a lot.
Yeah, same. I mean, I was like cross-country skiing and still managed to run into trees. It makes no sense.
I was going to point out that the trees don't move on their own, but I don't think they do. Anyway, so yeah, so those are my picks. One other thing that I'm just going to throw out there. It seems like a lot of people are coming to me with ideas for shows, and I am totally willing to help build the shows, put them on devchat.tv, etc. So if you have an idea for a podcast, I'm happy to entertain it and talk to you and see what we can figure out, especially if you have good connections in the community that you would be pulling guests from. So yeah, we're starting an Elixir podcast next week. Most of that work and most of those connections come out of my Ruby connections. But you know, I also have one of the co-hosts there is deeply involved and knows a lot of people over there. We're looking at this point at starting a data science podcast.
Cool.
And so if you're into that, of course, that kind of leads me along to do maybe a Python podcast since most of the data science stuff is done in Python. So anyway, I'm definitely looking for interesting stuff going on like that. So check that out. And one final thing is for JavaScript Jabber, I'm going to start doing daily or at least probably 5 days a week. I don't know if I'm going to do 7 or not. But they're just going to be really short videos on YouTube And I'm just going to talk about something, you know, that I pull off of Reddit or that I've been thinking about or that I talk to somebody about or that comes out of my work that I'm doing when I'm coding or something like that related to JavaScript. And so if you have questions or topic ideas for that, I'm also open to hearing those. And all of those, you can really go to devchat.tv. And if you click on the show that you want to suggest a topic for, there will be a link there by the time this goes live that says suggest a topic. And then you can put in have this guest or suggest a topic. So you can do that for the show or those shows. So
is your video series going to be called Wood Wood?
Yeah, I had a few people suggest things. You know, I'm Charles Maxwood, so I had a lot of things around Max as well for some of these shows.
Nice.
No, it's going to be JavaScript Rants is what I decided to call it. And you'll be able to find it at jsrants.com. I'm also doing it for Angular and Ruby. And then once we get this show a little more established, I may consider doing it for React. But yeah, it'll be interesting. You'll also be able to get those as an Alexa flash briefing and on their own RSS feeds. Alexa, shut up. You can't say her name anymore. But that's what they're officially called. So you'll be able to add that skill to your Echo and then be able to get them that way. So then while you're shaving, and that could be your chin or your legs, you know, you could be listening to me tell you about JavaScript. So
nice.
All right, Dave, what are your picks?
I've got a couple. So one is, we talked a little bit about conferences. There's a React conference in Boston called React Boston. I think it's just reactboston.com. Last year was the first one they did, and it went really well. And I think it's coming back again for 2018. I don't think tickets are on sale yet, but...
do you know about when it usually is?
Let's see. Last year it was, I want to say September. I think it was September last year. Let me hit the website and check.
Because, so you know, Boston is beautiful.
Yeah, September 23rd and 24th was awesome. The one last year. So I don't know if it'll be the same time this year or what, but it was a good time. So I recommend people go to that. And my second one is less React-y, is the website and community called Indie Hackers. IndieHackers.com. So I think there's some overlap maybe between people who are kind of into web development or getting into web development and the ones who sort of want to start their own side business or primary thing or whatever. Indie Hackers is kind of a group of those people who are starting up little side hustles and bootstrapping companies and stuff. So it's a cool place to hang out.
Nice.
I'll check that out.
Yeah. I guess I could mention my own thing too. So DaveSedia.com is my own site. My last name is spelled C-E-D-D-I-A. So DaveSedia.com/roundup. I'll have a couple links there for listeners of the show, and links to the post we talked about today. And DSedia pretty much everywhere else on the internet. So DSedia on Twitter and GitHub and such.
Very nice. All right. Well, I usually ask how people can find you, but I think you covered that. So we'll go ahead and wrap this up. Thanks for coming, Dave.
Yeah, this is fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. We will be back next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.